Utrikes-Maja.
Hejsan, jag skulle vilja ringa till USA.
Ja.
Då ska vi se här. Numret är plus ett då för USA. Mm. 615.
615.
336. Mm. 3689.
3689. Mm. Ett ögonblick.
Tack.
Ja, hallå igen.
Hallå?
Det verkar vara någon liknande telefonsvar eller någonting där. Vill du lyssna själv?
Ja, det kan jag göra. Mm. Mm, tack.
Ett ögonblick då. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, is this Harmony Korine?
Yes.
Hi, this is Tove Leffler from the Swedish radio.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
It's good. How are you?
Hey, good. Can I get off the other line real quick? Can you hold on?
Yeah.
Hold on 1 second. Hold on.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, did you know I was going to call you? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but I just forgot.
Yeah. Those things
happen.
I do,
but I forgot what time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Is it sort of early in the morning where you are?
Yeah, it's like, it's not that early. It's like 10 o'clock.
Okay. Here it's sort of evening and dark.
Oh.
Okay, but we're going to talk about your newest film, sort of.
Sounds good.
Cool. it's Mr. Lonely, and it's been showing here at the film festival in Stockholm. And it's sort of it's partly about impersonators.
Yeah.
What made you interested in impersonators?
I don't know. I guess like about 8 years ago, I was living in Paris. I was alone, and I was like pretty down on my luck. And I was like walking down the street one day, and I bit into a sandwich, and my tooth fell out. And the tooth like fell into the sandwich. So I ran into the sandwich store, and I started yelling at the guy because I thought it was a bone in the sandwich, but he said, "No, it's your tooth." And so I got really upset, and I was walking around, I was just wandering around the streets, and then I saw this guy. He was dancing. Looked like Michael Jackson. He was dancing. It was raining, and people weren't paying any attention to him. And I don't know what it was, but I just felt the need. I like took the tooth out of the sandwich and tipped him my tooth, and I struck up a friendship with it with the guy. After that, and I guess I didn't realize, but it was a porcelain tooth, or it was like a cap had been porcelain, so it was worth some money. And I just started thinking about impersonators and the obsessive nature of people who live as other people, icons.
Yeah. Well, is this true with the tooth and everything?
Say that again?
Is it true, this tooth story?
Yeah. No, I don't lie. Definitely. No, it's definitely true.
So you became friends with that guy?
Yes. Yeah. His name was Montrose. He was actually Moroccan. And I don't know. I hung out with him a few times. We, I just also thought it was a cool image.
Yeah. But would you yourself like to be an impersonator? Is that something that sort of attracts you?
No, not really. I mean, if I was, I'd probably take... I mean, I'd always like James Brown. I would probably do some James Brown. I like the way he dressed, and he had good hair, and he got a lot of women.
But this guy that you met, did he tell you why he wanted to be an impersonator?
Well, it was weird, because he actually, when I would say that to him, he would deny that he was an impersonator. He would basically say that he was... that it was more coincidental than anything else. Like, his feeling was that even if Michael Jackson had never, real one had not existed, that he would still look like that. That it was just kind of like coincidental. yeah, that was his kind of take on things.
Did you believe that?
Not really. I mean, I felt like, I mean, maybe he wasn't an exact impersonator. Like, when he would dance, he wouldn't actually use Michael's music, but his sounds and voice and the music that he would make and his dance moves are all copied from Michael. So, yeah, it's, you know. But I guess everybody's got to justify, you know, themselves and their, you know, in their own way. Everybody's got to kind of, you know, make up a reason why they exist the way they do.
Mm.
That was just this guy's reason.
But have you, and after that you decided, because you said you became interested in impersonators and that thing, and why did you decide to make a film about it?
I mean, the truth is it's not, I mean, yes, I was interested in impersonators, but I've always been interested in just people that are, that kind of like invent their own lives, you know, or you could even call them like obsessive characters and characters that kind of live outside the, you know, the accepted rules, the mainstream, people that, like, I don't know, maybe you call them pure souls or dreamers, people that kind of invent their own lifestyles, create a kind of, you know, or try to create some kind of utopia, something. And so for me, it was also that they were, that the impersonators were kind of as much symbolic of that dream as anything else. I mean, the ones in my movie. It's not a documentary or even an essay on impersonators. It's more, they're kind of like metaphor for something else, you know?
I see.
And so it wasn't like I really researched impersonators. I just kind of, you know, I just liked these also, I like the idea of having, like, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. and Abe Lincoln having, you know, dinner. Yeah. Or Marilyn Monroe being married to Charlie Chaplin, having a baby that's Shirley Temple. I just thought it was nice to kind of be able to play with the mythology.
Yeah, and I love this picture where Little Red Riding Hood is doing the laundry with James Dean.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I actually ended up marrying her.
Wow.
Yeah. Her laundries are so good that I couldn't help myself.
That's what you thought. Wow, she's doing the laundry so well.
It's true. She could fold like no one.
But do you think when you sort of when you impersonate someone else, how much of that person do you think you become?
Well, I mean, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, that was like the, you know, the duality of these characters and also something the actress had to deal with. I mean, I was obviously interested in the icon and the person they were impersonating, but most of all, I was curious about what kind of human being does such a thing for a living, you know? Where does the one begin and the other end? And how do they blur? But that's a good question. I think it's different for everyone.
Yeah. And for the people, the actors in your film, I mean, they sort of, they play someone who plays someone. That's kind of meta. What happens to them?
I don't know. They just get messed up in the head. They have problems after the movie's finished.
And then they turn out all crazy.
Yeah, they turn out crazy and they end up on food stamps and government welfare programs. It's very bad to work with me.
But do you think it's a way of escaping or a way of actually coming closer to yourself?
Yeah, maybe it's the same one. You mean in impersonating? I think everyone does it those guys do it for different reasons, but I think, you know, the Queen gives that speech in the movie where she says, you know, for her it's the most noble of all endeavors, that they do it so that they could keep the spirit of wonder alive, you know, that for them in their mind that these iconic characters that they're living as are, for the most part, they're dead and gone. And so this is the, at least the way they see it, the way that they justify it, that this is the kind of, they inhabit these characters and these icons and bring them to, they want to bring them to the people. They want them to live forever.
Hmm.
You know?
You said before that you're sort of interested in people and sort of pure souls or people that take other roots in society or whatever. The people in Mr. Lonely, like the people who sort of become stars, what kind of norms do you think they provoke?
What kind of what?
Norms, or maybe, I mean, what kind of boundaries in the society do you think they provoke, if you could say that? I mean, do you think they are provocative to people in society, and why then?
I think they're provocative to people in society? I don't know. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I just, you know, in making this movie or in conceptualizing the story, it was more just these characters who didn't fit in anywhere else, you know, who couldn't make the world make sense to them, who couldn't understand what was so funny when everyone was laughing. And so what did they do? They decided to create their own universe. It's almost like this movie is almost like a slight science fiction, you know, it's like the real world except slightly tweaked, slightly mm-hmm. imagined, you know. They decide to, you know, to all move together and live as a kind of a group in a commune and create their own lifestyle and be able to live without judgment. I mean, it's, you know, it's obvious, like it's an apparent, you know, metaphor, but at the same time, I really, without getting too, you know, without getting too conceptual, it was really just something, a way that I could see these kind of characters all interact with one another, the kind of humanness that comes out of them.
Yeah. How would you describe the sort of commune or almost family that they create together? It's like a family.
Yeah, it is like a family. I mean, I lived as a kid. I spent several years at a commune, and I just wanted, you know, I'd never seen it portrayed in a way that, you know, had that same kind of feeling. I know what it's like to suck on the tits of 10 different women, you know, to breastfeed on the tits of
How
10
is
different
that?
Women. It's very good. it can be good if the milk is good.
You remember this?
Yeah, because I did it up until, I guess, my early teens.
Oh.
No, I'm just joking. No, but I do have flashbacks. So,
for how long did you breastfeed?
Probably, what's the normal age? I mean, I imagine I only had about 6 or 7 teeth.
Yeah.
That were fully grown.
After that, the woman doesn't really want to have anyone.
Exactly. After that, the wet nurse refused me. No, but I know what it's like, and I just wanted to kind of, I don't know, you know, I just wanted to make it, really. I wanted to make something that made sense to me. But I think it's a good place. I think it's a kind of fantasy, you know?
Yes.
At least it is in the beginning. I mean, that's like the inherent tragedy with these characters, and a lot of times with obsessive people, is that the dreams are so big, you know, and the heart is so full that it's easy sometimes to get hurt.
Mm.
So, you know, that's kind of, you know, something that maybe happens to them.
That could happen to anybody, I suppose.
Yeah. I guess maybe these characters, those type of things, people that dream big are just more susceptible to it, I think.
Mm. More sort of sensitive. Wow.
Yeah.
Where are you? It's really, it's like it's windy or something.
Yeah. I'm actually standing in the wind. I'm like, there's like a pond by my house where these people go fishing every day. And I was just kind of staring at them with binoculars, trying to see, because I've never actually seen it, them catch a fish. And I've always just been wondered why they come out so early and stand there fishing if there's no fish in the pond. So I woke up early today to try to see if...
And did they have they caught any?
No. I've been out here for almost 3 hours now. And I haven't seen anyone, but there's usually the same, like, you know, 10 guys that are always here in the crack of dawn and always fishing, and they have these white styrofoam boxes, and it's cold out here. And I just said, you know, I've never seen a fish so actually come out of that water, and the water is pretty crummy looking, so you would expect maybe that fishes can't live in there, but I'm just trying to wait and see if they catch anything.
But maybe it's just the some, because I know people that go fishing, it's not so about catching the fish at in the sort of I don't know, mental state in waiting for it.
Yeah, but I mean, that's okay if you do that for the day or two, but these guys have been doing it for years. So I mean, that's a little extreme,
but I think it's some kind of meditation almost.
But it would be weird then, almost, if why would they even cast their lines? Why not just go and hang out there in the day? Like, why actually pretend? That's what I'm trying to get to the bottom of, this mystery.
Well, why don't you go and speak to them?
No, because these guys look much too, I don't know. They look like really imposing figures.
Oh.
I actually think a few of them look like they're from the Ukrainian professional basketball team that's here.
Oh, are you a bit scared of them?
Well, I'm not scared. Well, you know, yeah, I mean, from a distance, they look, everything seems fine. But I'm just not going to cross the pond and go up to them.
You can
get hurt that way.
I don't think so. They're probably very nice.
Yeah.
Or they use you as feed for the fish.
Yeah. We'll see.
But, you know, in the film Mr. Lonely, there are those people living in the castle, and then there are the nuns.
Yeah.
What's the similarity between the nuns and the impersonators?
I mean, I guess in the beginning when I was coming up with the movie, I mean, the very first image I have for the film, I usually make movies and it usually starts with the image and then picture or something, I start to build a story around it. And the first thing I had thought about years ago was just like nuns jumping out of airplanes, like on bicycles and kind of doing tricks in the sky, like without parachutes.
How did that image enter your head?
I don't know. Sometimes I just sit on a couch and let my mind go to places. Like, I don't know, I can almost get into trances sometimes and come up with things. You know, a lot of times they're just silly images, or other times something sustains itself, or I just kind of live with something for a while, and then I start to think that maybe there's something behind it. It's almost like conceiving of projects in the opposite way that is, you know, for me, that most people make films and most people start with stories, I imagine. I usually see somebody on a street corner, you know, someone with like headphones on their hair and a bloody foot and a missing finger. And I just start to imagine, like, or daydream, like, you know, where they live, what their apartment looks like, what do they do for work, do their kids love them, have they ever been poisoned, you know, those type of things. And then I just start to make movies up around them, movies in my mind, and that's kind of what happened with the nuns. I started to think, well, if a nun did jump out of an airplane without a parachute, could she survive, you know? And if she did survive, like, what would be the reason? Maybe she was just trying to test her faith. Maybe that if you believe in something enough, you could survive anything, you know? And so the story, then I started thinking about the other narrative with the impersonators, and then this nun story, as not two different movies, but as like kind of single, the same movie. And I thought, even though the stories never intersect, it was enough that they both spoke to the same idea, that maybe they served, like the one would serve as a kind of poetic punctuation to the other, that they would speak to the same idea of faith and obsession and hope and this idea of like wanting to be other than who you are, and that if you believe enough in something, you can, I don't know, that strange things can happen. And then also this idea that, like, eventually, a lot of times, the world has a way of coming back to pounce on you. So, I don't know, I just felt like they both were saying the same types of things, and that was enough.
What was that they were sort of saying then, would you say?
What's that?
And you say they were sort of saying the same thing, and what was that?
Yeah. But that's a secret. I can never tell you. That's like, I mean, the truth is, like, you know, as a director and as a writer or as whatever, as a person who makes these things, I just think sometimes it defeats the purpose if I fully try to explain my intent. That's even to say that I have any intent, but let's just assume that I do have some intent. I just think that it's sometimes not healthy for me to tell you.
No.
Yeah.
What's your view on religion?
My view on religion? I mean, seems good for some people, seems bad for others. I don't really have, you know, I don't have like any kind of real profound world view of things.
Your personal stance, are you religious yourself?
I mean, you know, I am a person who has to have faith, you know, who, like, I don't know, I've had some really horrific experiences in my life, and like, I don't know what you want to call it, religion, God, whatever you want, you know, you call it, I have to think there's some kind of a rhythm and a magic in the universe, something, even if I'm lying to myself, I think in some ways it's like a dream, that the dream is the most important thing, that some ways, like, it's the dream that can see us through.
Something so, supernatural.
So, yeah. What?
Do you believe in something supernatural?
Do I believe in something supernatural?
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't discount anything, but I'm not going to, like, commit to that. But I'm open to it. I mean, I've waited my whole life to see an alien, and I actually thought I saw one the other day, but it was just somebody dropping bundles of cocaine into the ocean.
Oh, no. And how did that look? Like an alien?
Like an alien.
Wow. How? Describe.
I just saw this plane hovering in Panama in the ocean, but it was late at night and not making any noise. And I thought it was an alien, and then someone told me, no, it was just people dropping cocaine.
Oh, no. Did you get disappointed?
No, I just scooped up that cocaine and started doing it.
From the bottom, from the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, then I really saw aliens.
You should drop some cocaine that in the pond outside your house and see what happens to the fishes.
That's true. These guys, the Ukrainian cokeheads.
Maybe they should need some cocaine.
Yep. Maybe that's what they're doing.
Maybe. That's why you never see them catch any fish, because they're really high on cocaine, so they don't need fish.
Yeah.
They think they're catching fish all the time.
That's true.
But I read I don't know what this has to do with it, but I read somewhere that you wanted to make that you sometime had an idea that you wanted to make a film about Ian Curtis. And I just saw this film by Anton Corbijn about Ian Curtis.
Yeah, I don't know where that rumor came from, but I never...
You never really?
No, never, never. I would never make a movie about Ian Curtis.
No, why would you?
Why wouldn't I? I just don't think it's that interesting.
No.
I just don't think that, like, I mean, I think maybe the real guy is interesting, but I just don't have any interest in making movies about rock singers. I just don't like those movies for the most part. I did like that movie, the Buddy Holly story with Gary Busey. I thought it was good. But besides that, they're all just, all his films seem like pale imitations of the real person.
Yeah.
I would rather just listen to the music, and if I was really interested in one of those guys, I'd rather just listen to the music and, I don't know, read a book or something. But, I mean, I'm not saying that that movie is not, I'm not saying that that movie you're talking about is not a good movie. I just, my personal, myself, I wouldn't make a movie about a singer.
But still, you have sort of made, because that's also a movie about icons, and you have kind of made a movie about icons, but in another way.
Yeah, maybe, but maybe I make movies about things without them really being about those things.
Well, you could make a film about Ian Curtis and not being about Ian Curtis, but or whatever.
Yeah. No. I never. I'm not even. I don't really even know that much about Joy Division. I don't really. I mean, I think I've heard a few good songs, but that's about it.
Yeah, I'm not very into them or him or whatever either.
Yeah.
But going back to the nuns because they also, when you see them in the beginning, they also live in some kind of alternative family kind of thing there, where they're playing volleyball without a ball and stuff.
Yeah.
How would you describe the way they are living?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying before, was that they again, in some ways, it's a community that they invented. It's I would say that these people are isolated and they're dreamers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, they have the best of intentions, but they're questioning their faith. And then, just by chance, someone falls out of an airplane and prays the entire way down and survives. So one by one, I think it becomes a question of of faith and how is this possible. But yeah, I mean, I think there's something beautiful about people that isolate themselves and kind of just invent their own reality. So I think that's kind of, in both stories, there is a sense of, you know, communal insanity.
Or sanity, I don't know.
Or sanity. I mean, it's easy sometimes to, you know, to begin at a point of sanity and end up in some place that's completely and utterly insane.
But who's decided that it's not insane to live in a house in a suburb with two kids and a wife? I mean,
yeah.
Why is that sane?
Yeah, I don't know. You tell me.
No, I don't know. I just think that I like the idea of people who don't choose the sort of pre-written path or whatever.
Yeah, that's what the movie's about.
Yeah, I know.
You should watch it.
Wow, I haven't seen it. I was kidding. Which picture do you like most in it? Could you say that, or image?
Oh,
you said you started with image, with the nun cycling.
Yeah, I do love that image. I do love the image of the nun and the bicycle and the clouds. That is probably my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I have so many. I mean, there's a lot. I like the one of Marilyn in the forest dancing, and I like the Snow White. I mean, Little Red Riding Hood.
Snow White.
I forgot. It's been a while since I've seen the movie.
It could have been Snow White.
Yeah, exactly. I could have married a different cartoon character.
But I also read somewhere that you didn't want to, like, before, this was a long time ago, and that you didn't like to make movies that had a plot.
Yeah,
because the life doesn't have a plot, I think, was
I guess what I was saying at the time, I mean, I just was never interested in plots or standard plots or people that plot things out or things that are plotted out or, you know, people that plot and plot and plot and plot. I just find it so utterly repulsive. I just I wanted to, like, detonate a bomb into the people, you know, on top of the people who plot. Because, you know, What is that thing about, like, you know, people plot and God laughs? I just think that, like, it's ridiculous. So, and also it's boring. And for me, like, I never felt like there was a beginning to anything. I never felt like I was in the middle of it, and I never felt like I was at the end. I just always felt like things existed, and there's randomness to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was a kind of chaos and a poetry and a madness to life, and that I just don't understand why everyone is so obsessed with things beginning and ending. Things just exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always wanted my work to reflect that sense of, you know,
yeah,
chaos and randomness.
But there is some kind of, it's, because in Mr. Lonely, it's much more of a plot than in your recent films.
Well, it's more of a story, maybe. Like,
yeah.
There's
yeah, maybe
a
it's not a plot, but...
Yeah, there's a story that's maybe more traditional than the other films. In some ways, the other movies I made were more of like a provocation and more kind of like lyrical and musical. In some ways, like, they were... they were deconstructed and random. Mm-hmm. And this one, for no other reason than I thought it just suited the story best, was something a bit more simple and maybe even more kind of structured.
Mm-hmm.
But still not plotted, just more thought out
mm-hmm.
beforehand.
Mm-hmm. But, no, I forgot what I was going to say. Yeah, but still, it when you talk about life, I mean, what I can think is sort of sometimes frustrating about life is that it doesn't have an end, because one is so used to seeing those films, so you know, you live your life and you're like, okay, but this is when it's supposed to end, and then it just continues, and that's sometimes
yeah.
sort of horrible.
Oh, that frustrates you?
Yeah. Because it's like, oh, if this was a Hollywood movie, it would stop now.
Yeah.
And that would be such a relief.
Yeah, yeah. But also then maybe you'd be, what's it called? Maybe you'd be fucking Bruce Willis. And then you'd end up with a bad case of herpes.
Yeah, that would, of course, be horrible.
Yeah.
But I could also be fucking, I don't know, Samantha Who? Moore.
Who?
Samantha
Michael
Moore.
Moore.
No, Samantha Moore.
Who's Samantha Moore?
Oh, isn't there an actress called her?
Oh, no, you mean Michael Moore? Yeah, that's good.
Michael Moore.
That would actually be really funny.
For you or for me? Or for him? For him.
I think for me it would be more sad, but for you, maybe.
It would be funny. For him yeah. It would be great.
Exciting.
But then, so... Because now you've made this film, and it's more of a plot, and it's also sort of it has more of an ending. Why, sort of?
I don't know. I don't really know. I don't try to think about it all that much. I just try to do it. It's something I felt. You know, I don't know. I think all the movies, in some ways, reflect my mental state at the time of, you know, making them, and so. It just seemed to make sense to me. It just seemed to feel like there was a natural kind of pause at the end of the story.
Mm. So what's your mental state now?
My mental state now it's not quite, you know, full blown schizophrenia, but maybe like a slight level degree underneath that.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you like it to be full blown?
No. Actually, my life's pretty good now. It's just pretty simple. I'm married, and I watch these guys fish now.
And you're back in Nashville.
Yeah, in Tennessee. Yeah.
Yeah. Why did you want to move back?
I don't know. Because I grew up here, and I like it. I have a few friends here. Life's pretty simple. I can I kind of understand things here, and. It's kind of quiet. I don't really like living in big cities so much anymore. And I don't know. I just enjoy the air and the people and the food.
It sounds... Are you free now or are you working on something?
Yeah, no, I'm writing right now. I'm, like, writing the next project. I've already written one, but I had this other kind of crazy idea, so I was going to try to write it and then decide what to do next.
Okay. Is it turning out good?
I can't tell yet. I mean, it's been making me laugh a lot, but, you know, we'll see.
That's good, though, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's a good sign. I mean, I wrote this one script about a pig that would walk up walls. His name was Pistachio, and it was called What Makes Pistachio Nuts. And so his owner would put a saddle on it and then put the special adhesive on its hooves, and it would walk up the side of the walls and onto ceilings, and people would pay money to see that. And so I was trying to court Harrison Ford to play the pig. Oh, I'm sorry, the guy that rides the pig, and I'm still waiting for an answer.
When did you contact him? Was it a long time ago?
No, it was like 2 months ago.
Okay, so you could have him in there.
Yeah, but I don't know. I've gotten no real serious reply, and I'm starting to get very upset.
Maybe you should threaten him.
Yeah, exactly.
to make him do it.
Yeah.
Who would play the pig then?
No, the pig would be a real pig. Oh. Actually, I used to have a pig named Trotsky when I was a kid, and I kind of modeled it after Trotsky the pig.
Was he climbing up walls?
No. But his personality, I modeled this pig after.
I would love to see that film.
Yeah, so anyway, maybe that one or something else. We'll see.
Mm. But are you still writing script for other people's films, as you've done as well? Or like screenplays?
I'm not doing that now, but, you know, I'm not opposed to it. Like, I kind of like the idea of doing both, of writing, of making, directing films and also writing for other people. So, I mean, if it was like a director that I liked and that's a cool story, I wouldn't have any problem with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know if I think I'm finished. With
yeah,
you.
That was a good one.
With you.
Yeah, you finished with me. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. That's the way you guys do it.
Yeah, that's the way I'm going to do it. I'm going to
try
and I don't know, edit this down to whatever it turns out, 5 minutes
it's
or
only
something.
5 minutes? That's it?
You know, now how it is on radio. No, 8. I think it's going to be 8 or 10 in the end.
I gave you my soul and I only get 8 minutes of airtime in return. Jeez.
Wow. But I'm gonna put I have a website, and all the interviews I do, I put out the whole unedited interview on my website. Because,
yeah, that'd be good. We should. I would love nothing more than to hear myself talk.
for 40 minutes.
For 40 minutes. That would actually really make me excited.
It's more, yeah, you can go in and listen to it over and over and over and over again.
I'll put it on repeat.
Yeah, exactly.
But in truth, I wish I was there at that film festival. It sounds like fun, and it's like...
It's lots of like fun.
Yeah, those guys have always supported me and put my films there and stuff, so...
Yeah.
So, anyway, I just want to thank all those guys and tell them I'm with them in spirit. You in spirit.
Because I'm going to the... they're giving out the prize tonight. Who's winning the competition.
I hope I won.
Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, if you would, you probably would have known now.
Oh, well, then forget it.
Stupid them.
Forget it. Never mind.
Yeah, but so I'm gonna go there and see who wins the prize and whatever.
Give them my best.
Yeah, I will. And have a good day with the Fishers.
Thank you so much. I'll let you know if I see them catch anything.
Oh yeah, that's what that really made me curious now, if they will ever catch a fish.
All right, I'll let you know.
Okay, take care.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye bye.
Bye.